is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're focusing, of course, on family law, but specifically using alternative dispute resolution, which we'll abbreviate with ADR, or mediation for issues in dissolution of marriage cases. My guests are family law attorneys Esther Rosenfeld, Jill Mondry, who's a certified specialist in family law, and Lauren Zorfis. They're members of the family law section of the State Bar and the San Mateo County Bar Association, and they have law offices in San Mateo. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, and this particular section is also segment is also funded by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And I welcome you back, all three of you who have been guests on the program before. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Chuck.
You know what I think we should do, as you have suggested? How about talking about the kinds of alternative dispute resolution? What are they? And maybe we can then talk about the benefits and maybe the drawbacks, if there are any. Would you like to do that? Would you like to start, Esther, on that?
Sure, that sounds like a good approach. One of my favorite kinds of alternative dispute resolution is mediation, and it's something that many family law attorneys are doing. And as we were chatting about a little before the show, I think that we're going to be seeing an even greater boon in these types of alternative dispute resolution in California as the budget cuts affect the access to justice for a lot of people in our courts. We're certainly seeing that in family law. So mediation is very commonly used, in my opinion, an excellent way to resolve the issues in a divorce case. And we'll talk more about that as we get into mediation a little bit more. There's also collaborative law, which some people may or may not have heard about, and Jill sits on the collaborative law group and practices collaborative law, and I think she can speak to that. And then other things that people do to resolve disputes, like property disputes in particular, arbitration would be another way to resolve disputes. And those are kind of the three biggies that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. So alternative dispute resolution is kind of the general description of these various approaches to not going into court and fighting it out in court. Is that essentially correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So what are the benefits? For example, is it cost-wise, is it cheaper to do alternative dispute resolution than going into court and having a battle with your spouse?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the things that I'll always tell a prospective client, I want them to know about these forms of alternative dispute resolution. And a big concern for people is economics. So rather than two parties paying two attorneys at, you know, hundreds of dollars per hour, you've got two people paying one mediator, so the hourly rate might be the same, but they're going to be sharing that cost for almost the entire process. It is generally recommended that before signing off on a marital settlement agreement, each party take that agreement to their own consulting counsel, a family law attorney who will look at the agreement from an advocacy standpoint. And when that happens, there may often be some tweaking of the marital settlement agreement that goes on. But the amount of advocacy attorney involvement is so much lower than it would be in a traditional litigation framework.
Esther talked about collaborative law. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? And then I know you wanted to respond to something here.
I think the biggest difference is, and people call often and say, what is mediation? Mm-hmm. If they've never been into a mediation of any sort, and the first thing that they should know is a mediation, per se, is the two people come in, the mediator acts as a neutral. So there are usually three people in the room, and that's it. There's a type of mediation where you can bring a lawyer with you. In family law, that isn't as traditional. Collaborative, rather than an impartial party sitting at the table, is really, the definition is, a working together to achieve a goal. And collaborative law is a very formal process. We have several groups in the Bay Area. It is an out-of-court settlement. Mm-hmm. Pivotal to collaborative law is that you do have an attorney at the table at all times. Mm. one of the agreements, the first agreement you reach in collaborative law, is that you will never step into a courtroom.
Oh,
everybody,
really?
Everybody signs an agreement. If you step out of the collaborative process, you can no longer use your attorney in a traditional litigation case.
That's interesting.
And I think the biggest, there are many distinct differences. I think the biggest difference for general information is that mediation, you have quicker access to a neutral party, and it is very well suited for people who may come to a family law case or call a family law lawyer mediator, ready to settle the issues, having already knowing what they want to do, and just needing someone to help them step through
it. But that's
it.
Unusual, is it not, that people know what they want to do ahead of time, Lauren, or is it? Because I haven't practiced family law for a long, long time.
I think going into the family law process, most parties to a family law case have no idea what they want or what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mediation is available in all areas of law. It's it's just negotiating an agreement between the parties. But one of the reasons it is so uniquely suited or best suited for family law is what's at stake in a family law case. When you look at civil litigation, you know, somebody is suing for damages. I fell in your store and I hurt myself, you owe me money. A family law case isn't that black and white. A family law case, for the most part, will involve children. And it's going to involve two people that have had their lives intertwined for some period of time. And when you look at unwinding that, you want to do it, especially again when there are young children involved, in a way that makes it safe and comfortable for everybody. And the litigation process, I would offer, is not necessarily the best way to achieve that goal. And so part of the mediation process is really educating the clients, the parties in the case, as to what this process is, what it means, and the great benefits it can offer them, such as crafting their own agreement. If you go to court, there are limitations on what the court can order. If you go through mediation, you can agree to something that a judge otherwise would not be able to order. So you have that freedom in the process to say, this is what is going to suit my family. I know I couldn't get this relief in a court, but I can make this agreement guided by and facilitated by a trained mediator. And I can get this agreement signed off by a judge, and it can become an order.
Is that what you normally do in most of these cases? If you go through mediation, then you submit it to a judge who will sign off as a permanent dissolution of the marriage. Is that the normal process?
This is Jill. And yes, that would be in a traditional mediation in family law. The goal is to resolve all of your issues, put them into one settlement agreement, submit that agreement to the court, have the court sign off, and then that is your roadmap for how you will go forward in the future.
What if you have two people who are really angry at each other, which I presume there's a significant percentage still of people who are getting a divorce or dissolution of marriage? How do you deal with someone or some persons like that?
This is Esther. That's a great question, Chuck. I think there's always anger, even in the clients that come to mediation, and it can be in varying degrees, but I think it's healthy for people to be able to express that anger in a limited fashion, and most mediators at the outset will set some ground rules that everybody agrees to about communication, such as, for example, we're going to respect one another's time, one another's airtime when we're speaking, so no interrupting, name calling, etc. But if there is...
You can't swear at each other, are you saying, in a mediation?
No swearing, no throwing rotten tomatoes. But if there comes a point where somebody wants to express their anger, which is often really a deeper grieving, mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm, you know, it's safer to express his anger. That's an excellent place to do that, and that's one of the things that, as Lauren was saying, that could never happen in a courtroom. That's not the place for people to process, whereas in a mediation, they may be able to get that resolution by talking about the underlying feelings that have led them to this impasse. And the mediator's role, again, really is to facilitate a healthy discussion, so there is some staying on track that needs to happen, and also to reframe. So a skilled mediator will hear what is behind the anger and the message and reframe it in a way that the other party can hear it and accept it.
Are the mediators normally attorneys, family law attorneys, or are they people who have had experience in mediation, perhaps in a broad range of things, but maybe they've now specialized in family law mediation?
You don't, Lauren, have to be. This is Lauren.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an attorney, mm-hmm, to be a mediator. However, there in family law, especially, most of the people doing mediation and acting as a neutral are family law attorneys. And in family law, it is particularly helpful to have the mediator be both a trained mediator and a family law attorney, because there are certain legal, mm-hmm, requirements, mm-hmm, to get a divorce that have to be met, and only a family law attorney is going to be able to advise on those and to make sure that those legal thresholds are met.
You don't need, of course, though, to have any fault on either party's part.
Absolutely not. California is a
no-fault
divorce,
okay,
state. Right. So, we say it's irreconcilable differences. Mm-hmm. As long as those exist, then the parties are entitled to a divorce, whether one side wants it or not. And as Esther was discussing, it is so important to address those emotional issues, because oftentimes what is actually causing the impasses that we see in litigation is the inability of the parties to express their, mm-hmm, emotions, mm-hmm, and what is happening for, mm-hmm, them on a gut level. Mm-hmm. And to be able to be facilitated through that process and to be able to be heard. And you can really only do that when you have a neutral facilitating the process. It is, for me as a mediator, one of the most amazing experiences is watching that release, is watching the parties get to a place where they feel like they have been heard. And it is, you can have the most stubborn, steadfast person that, mm-hmm, is not moving from their position like that,
mm-hmm,
drop,
mm-hmm,
their defenses when they feel, mm-hmm, validated and they, mm-hmm, feel heard.
Lauren, when you were employed by San Mateo County as the, I guess you were the director of the Family Law Facilitator's Office, were you not?
Yes, I was.
And the clients who came in were basically unrepresented persons who were going through dissolution of marriage. Is that essentially correct?
Yes, we could only see unrepresented persons.
At that time, because you've been gone now for a few years, but at that time, what kind of mediation approach was there, and what's it like now, at least using San Mateo County as an example?
Well, as Esther was alluding to, with all the cuts in the state budget, there have been so many programs eliminated from the court. And unfortunately, one of the programs that we were able to offer when I was there is the Family Law Facilitator's Office did pro per, which is someone who is not represented, mm-hmm, settlement conferences, essentially, where we would work with the parties from anywhere between 1 to 3 hours. Typically, it was a 1 hour. And for most folks that didn't have the financial ability to retain an attorney, we weren't dealing with that many financial issues. Mm-hmm. So it lended itself more to a 1 hour settlement. But we would guide the parties through a settlement process and help them reach resolution on those issues. Unfortunately, that is not able to be offered by the Family Law Facilitator's Office anymore. But our court, who's been always one of the leaders in ADR, in family law and in civil, has now a three-part program on this process, mm-hmm, where there are basically two official panels and one sort of informal program. Mm. And the family law bar in San Mateo County is just
unbelievably generous with their time. And on Friday afternoons, basically go in and volunteer. I know all three of us here have done this.
In the courthouse?
In the courtroom.
In the courtroom in Redwood City.
In Redwood City.
The Hall of Justice.
Mm-hmm. And we help the unrepresented parties reach settlement on their issues. There is also a sort of second-tier panel whereby three-hour mediations are offered, again, on a volunteer basis at the court to assist litigants that are represented or unrepresented.
No cost on this?
There's no cost
That's
for that.
Wonderful.
And then the third tier, there is it's, I think, $100?
It's $50 each.
Yeah, $50
person.
Each. Yeah. So it's $100. Mm-hmm. And they get 90 minutes with a mediator. And then after that, if there needs continued mediation, it would be at that mediator's rate.
I see. Very, very interesting. Because, as you said, Esther, at the beginning of the program, because of the court cutbacks in things that are available. I mean, for example, I went into yesterday one of the clerk's offices in my building, the Hall of Justice in Redwood City, to get take a look at the file, etc. And here I see this very large room, which used to have a whole bunch of Superior Court clerks sitting at desks, and most of the desks now are empty. It's pretty alarming. It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
And on February, I think it's February 13th, I'm planning to have the presiding judge, Bob Foyles, and Judge Mark Forkham, and Patrick Kelly, who's the president of the state bar, talk about court funding and what they envision may be happening, hopefully good. I happened to talk to one of the judges a few months ago who said it's going to get worse. And so it's kind of scary. Frankly, especially for people who can't afford attorneys and are hoping that they can get their problems resolved through what's available to the court. Alternative dispute resolution also obviously applies if people are pulling their child one arm one way and the other arm the other way. Is that right?
This is Jill, and I would say yes, absolutely. Both colleagues tonight have been very well expressed on the importance of being heard and the essentially the magic of mediation in having people understand that there is a different means and manner of getting to a goal. When you are safe, which a very experienced mediator or a trained mediator will be able to set the stage for that safety.
Mm-hmm.
It allows people to be heard, and that's usually the biggest issue with children, is it are you hearing my concern?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand that I have a concern for this child, and I don't think you are aware of that, or you don't honor that?
Mm-hmm.
And again, an experienced mediator will be able to diffuse that properly, make sure each party is heard, and assist them in coming up with something that may be a very novel resolution. One of the biggest issues with the push-pull with kids could be right at the beginning, and it's when do we see them? You know, do we see them every other weekend? Do we do a schedule for them? What happens when it's the child's birthday? How about the parent's birthday? If there's a holiday coming up,
do you suggest in terms of that issue, which probably I can see there are arguments or potential arguments about that, do you see in terms of the role of the mediator helping people to put together some kind of an agreement where they put down on paper in an agreement, here's what we are willing to do, I'll see Johnny on this date, you'll see Johnny on that date, taking into account various birthdays, et cetera, et cetera, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever the holiday may be. Do you
all
see
of that?
That?
All absolutely.
Of that.
Okay. And one of the things, again, a family law attorney is very aware of is starting with the perspective that the rights of the child.
Mm-hmm.
So each child has a right to remain a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you keep that as the best interest of the child, as the focus of any mediation, you tend to get the parents to warm to the idea that it's not I'm not against you, you're not against me. We are together in trying to create a two-parent, two-household parenting arrangement for the child. Mm-hmm. And yes, you would get that into a written agreement.
I think a lot of people, pardon me, still think that the mother of the child has the right to essentially the basic custody of the child. What is the current situation today in terms of what you see?
We're all smiling at each other, which obviously listeners can't see, because it is such a common misconception, and the law is very clear that the best interest of a child is met when there is continuous contact with both parents. Mm-hmm. It is not gender specific at all. Having said that, there are cultural differences that we need to acknowledge. A lot of people enter the divorce process, or not even the divorce, but the separation of parents. They may not be married, from a cultural perspective of, you know, this is mom's reign, or mm-hmm. sometimes this is dad's reign. Mm-hmm. But the California courts are prohibited from looking at custody as gender specific mm-hmm. or gender related. Mm-hmm. Both parents are. A child, actually, as Jill was saying, the child has the right to have time with both of his or her parents. Mm-hmm. And that is where we all operate from, because that really is...
Pardon me, don't let me interrupt you.
Go ahead.
You're very responsive here. I was opening my mouth and she stopped. Lauren, incredible. Oh, brother. Okay. What if you have a child who's old enough, let's say a child who's maybe older than 8 years, 8 years or older, who has a preference that he or she wants to be with one of the parent more most of the time than another? How is that dealt with, if it is? That is the child's wishes.
Well, that's a very, very interesting question, especially right now.
Why?
Because the law has just changed on that issue very recently. As it stands now, if a child the age of 14 or older wants to be heard, the court has the discretion to actually hear that child.
Mm-hmm.
And in some instances, it's unclear because it's such a new law, but maybe mandated to hear that child. But that's sort of the threshold age. And if it were a case that were going through the courts, mm-hmm. every court in the state of California has family court services available.
Which includes mediation, does it not? Or am I wrong on that?
They're not calling it mediation anymore. It's
really?
Recommending counseling or counseling mm-hmm. if they're not what's called a recommending county. And a recommending county just means that the family court services can make recommendations as to what's in the best interest of the child to the court.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we handle it in mediation is it's very case specific. I think in general, and I'll defer to my colleagues who are nodding their heads already and don't even know what I'm going to say yet, but I would think that an 8-year-old is a little young
So that's not going to be something that is going to control, or a mediator is going to take that and follow that definitely.
And it goes back to what Jill was saying. A child has a right to be a child.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And yeah. So often, I mean, again, a role of a mediator is also an educator. And educating the parents that you don't turn to your 8-year-old and say, so who do you want to live with? because that happens.
And this,
I bet.
This
I bet
is
it
Jill.
Does.
And
yeah.
it's Lauren is introducing a really good topic for this, as where do you turn then?
Yes.
So if there really is an 8-year-old that is truly expressing to you a desire mm-hmm. to either be with you or the other
mm-hmm.
parent,
mm-hmm.
and you are in mediation, mm-hmm. a mediator can call upon a child specialist to talk, mm-hmm. to spend some time with the child, mm-hmm. not really counseling, mm-hmm. Not really an evaluation of the child, but to get a better read. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the child will give more information mm-hmm. in that format mm-hmm. that then you can bring back mm-hmm. to mediation and mm-hmm. give to the parents to say, how do you address this now?
Let's do this. We're nearly at the end of the statewide version of the program, which we're live in the Bay Area for an hour. We're live on the internet for an hour at www.klw.org. But we do record the first half hour, and we send that first half hour to a number of stations that air the program the following week. What we have not talked about yet, I don't think, in any depth, is how does someone who's listening to you now, wherever that person may be, certainly in the state of California, how does that person find a mediator in the area of family law? What do you do, basically, practically speaking?
Well, I think a lot of family law, this is Esther, I think a lot of family law attorneys do mediation. I know, you know, all three of us do, and many of our colleagues do, so you could start by looking at your family law attorneys in your local area and finding out whether they have a mediation practice as well. I did want to go back to a point, Chuck, if I may, just something that Jill, that we've all been talking about here today about, you know, I think you asked such a good question about what to do with a child, mm-hmm, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't want that child to become the rope in the middle of the tug of war. And it goes back to the term, I love the term that you use, Jill, magic of mediation, because I think that part of what happens in mediation that we don't get so much, if ever, in the litigation context, is that when the parties are kind of breaking through these boundaries and getting at the feelings that are underneath what was, you know, what's holding up the dispute, they also come to hear and understand the other side's point of view and recognize the value that child would not be there but for this person that they mm-hmm. are now standing in opposition with. And what I have found is that often melts, thaws out the process such that they organically come to a resolution that really is child-centered and really puts their mm-hmm. child's mm-hmm. best interests first. In other words, when they don't view the other side as an enemy, but rather, you know, we're in the situation, we have this wonderful child together, and they're looking at it.
Let's not ruin it for the child.
Let's not ruin it for the child, exactly.
Yeah. Jill, this I know is, you wanted to say something.
Oh, no, I actually was going to mention when Lauren was very good about the three tiers of dispute resolution through the court system, and she was specific to San Mateo County, but most counties now do have a panel that would, you walk into the courthouse, it may be a form in the clerk's office, it may be a form in the actual court room as you are there, but you would be able to sign up and ask to be referred to a mediator through the court system.
Oh, that's wonderful to know.
And they usually call it an ADR program, a dispute resolution program.
I think that's wonderful to know. All right. Well, what we're going to do in right now is we're about at the end of the statewide version of the program. And we will, for those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue live in the Bay Area, live on the Internet. And for those of you who would like to join us in a couple of minutes or so, I will give our local phone number. It is about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program in the family law area where we're talking about where there are problems in the dissolution of marriage, which may involve potentially so many problems, including child custody as a major one. We're talking about using alternative dispute resolution, mediation, and other things to try to resolve this without going into court and having a real battle in court with each side having possibly an attorney for whom he or she or they are spending a lot of money. My guests are members of the Family Law Section of the State Bar. They're also members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. And they are Lauren Zorfus and Jill Mondry and Esther Rosenfeld. And all three of them have been guests on this program before. And so if you have a question, a comment, a concern, something that you'd like some direction on from them, the number here is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you're out of the area and you're listening to this program on radio on the Internet at www.kalw.org, that's the same number you should use. Try not to, if you can, this is a very difficult area of the law. And I have found when I've done family law programs over the year, and by the way, next month is actually the 29th year that I will have been doing this program.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. With the family law section having been a funder of this program probably about 20 years, San Mateo County Bar Association has been involved as a funder over about 15 years. But when we've done family law programs, I have found that people are somewhat reluctant to have their voices on the air because they're afraid their spouse is going to hear them and there's going to be all kinds of retaliation, etc. So let me just suggest something to you. If you feel you have a question and can be succinct about it, please call the number and you'll speak to Martin and he'll write down your question. Don't give us fourscore and 7 years ago or whatever it is. Don't give us a long thing. Try to be succinct and Martin will write it down and bring it in and we'll talk about it. So again, the number 1-415-841-4134. There are a couple of things that I'd like you to know about with respect to San Mateo County. There's a project that the San Mateo County Library and the San Mateo County Law Library are involved in called Lawyers in the Library. And in the various cities throughout San Mateo County, there are sessions where attorneys will come and you can sit down with an attorney, no charge whatsoever. It's free legal clinics in the various various cities in San Mateo County. And I want to give you a couple of websites should you be interested in this. And for the law library, that is SMC, which stands for San Mateo County, lawlibrary.org. It's all lowercase, no spaces, SMC, lawlibrary.org, which will tell you when, for example, the law library is having its lawyers available and presentations that are being done at the law library in Redwood City. The Library Association in San Mateo, which is different from the law library, that website is SMCL, that's SMC, San Mateo County, and L for library.org. So if you're interested, you can find out in your city, if you're in San Mateo County, when there will be free clinics in your local library, and so it may be helpful to you in that respect. So we have a lot of people who want to talk to you at this point. And for those of you who are interested, we will do our Call a Lawyer night at the end of the end of February, which is going to be February 27th. So I hope you will join us then at that time. And you might want to jot down the number 1-800-525-9917. Sharla, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. It's your turn.
Thank you. Actually was just discussing this very matter, and my mom said that this is on the air right now and I should call in with any questions. And my question is, a lot of the different forms online are for people who've been married. If you've never been married, but you need the father of the child is still involved, very involved, very, very involved, but is not the legal custodian or the child does not live with him and he wants to have some kind of rights. How do you establish custody in that case? Because it's not very clearly defined on any of the websites.
That's a very good question. Let me get Lauren. I know one time when we did a program, I think this is one of our topics that we did.
If two people are not married but have a child together, under California law, legal paternity has not been established. And rather than filing a petition for dissolution, which is what married people use, you can file a petition for parentage. And the Judicial Council has a website. It used to be courtinfo.ca.gov. And if you go to that, it will redirect you to the right URL because they changed it.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
They have changed it.
They've changed it. But that it will take you to the right one. And you can, under family law, there are parentage petitions However, I would strongly urge you to either consult an attorney or go to the family law facilitator's office before filing the petition to make sure, A, that you're completing it properly, and B, that you're completing all of the forms that you need, because just not checking one box can mean that you don't get the relief that you want to get. Yes.
Oh my. So you got to watch those boxes, huh?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Charlotte, does that give you some direction of what to do?
Yes, yes. Okay. And, you know, everyone, when I've asked in the past, you know, he has signed the birth certificate. So there is, I guess that's not the parentage. And I was unclear as to what was needed in order to proceed. Yeah. And that was not enough.
And the other thing that I would add, Charlotte, is, you know, we've been talking about mediation in the divorce context, and it is not exclusive to the divorce context. If you and the father have any type of shared communication, you already have something in common, your child. Seek out a mediator who can help you not just complete the forms, but work out an agreement that makes sense for both of you and your child.
And just to clarify, Charlotte, if you're not aware of this, the Family Law Facilitator's Office is the common name used at each county throughout California has a Family Law Facilitator's Office.
Okay.
And there's no charge involved with that, I hope, still.
Still, that's
still,
the time
still,
being, anyway.
We hope. Keep your fingers crossed, folks. But good luck to you, Sharla.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Let me also mention something else, because as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, this particular segment is funded by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and also the San Mateo County Bar Association. But I want to also alert you to the benefits of dealing with your lawyer referral service in whatever county you may be in. So let me mention something to you here. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. Again, this would be during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And if you're in any other county in California, as I said earlier, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up with a half an hour consultation face to face. Usually, if you can't get into the attorney's office, I think they'll do their best to try to make the interview available by phone. And depending on the county, for half an hour, it could be a low of $25, could be a high of $35. It's a great way to get at least some basic information. So that's something I'd like you to know. And Vernon, welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you. I had a question about child support. And what age is child support finished?
This is Esther.
This is Esther. So Vernon, you want to know at what point you would stop paying child support. That would typically be when the child is no longer a minor. And if they are 18 years old and still in high school, it will be until they finish high school. There are situations where child support would extend beyond that if it's a special needs child or something of that nature. But generally, child support is paid for the minority of the child, the period of time that the child is a minor.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Does that help you?
Yes,
good, Vernon. Okay.
And let me just add that that's in California, because that can vary state by state. So if the order is out of another state, different states have different ages of, of majority.
Okay, well, very good. Vernon, thank you very much for calling. Sarah, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on the air. I really appreciate this show.
You're welcome.
And I am actually a mediator myself. And I just wanted to put out there another model that can be helpful for some families and conflict that hasn't been mentioned yet on the show. I know that collaborative law was mentioned as one option and mediation with a single mediator. However, I'm originally trained as a child and family therapist, and secondly as a mediator, and I work with a family law attorney in a co-mediation practice. And sometimes that can be helpful without having to have the number of people who are involved with a collaborative process, and for folks who still want to be able to mediate but have additional psychological support for them and their children. So I wanted to put that out there as a useful model.
So let me make sure I understand. You're
sure.
Saying, how does this work again, Sarah?
So there are two mediators, essentially, that meet with a family, with a couple at any given time. And so in my case, I'm the therapist mediator, half of our partnership, and I work with a family law attorney mediator. And so she and I, in sessions with families, tag team. You know, at times, obviously, she's more of the legal expert, and I have a long history in working with families in a psychological context. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so for those issues that are can be more sensitive psychologically, I'll take those pieces over, and she can take over the family law details over. Mm-hmm. And it's a good balance, especially for families who are undergoing severe trauma or high conflict.
Yeah, it sounds very practical and very helpful to me. Let me get some comments from my guests. Sarah, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Yeah, and just if I can throw out there,
sure.
CAMediate.com.
CA, you're saying CA like California, mediate.com?
Correct. Is a website that can be helpful to describe this model further. So thanks for
That's very interesting.
That
and where is your office?
We have a practice in Fremont.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well,
thank
Sarah,
you.
Thank you very much. Let me get some comments.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for calling
this
in.
This is Esther.
Thanks, Chuck, for reminding me. Sorry.
I knew that
yes.
was your name.
I think that sounds really good. And as you mentioned, particularly with the high conflict cases where people... there's a real need for communication, assistance with communication and with processing the feelings that are underlying the conflict. So give my office a call.
Yeah.
Maybe we can work together.
Yeah. This is Jill.
That's interesting. Cool. Yeah. Let me do this, Sarah, if you are still there. Let me give the phone numbers of my guests here. By the way, they are not partners, but they're in the same suite in San Mateo. The city of San Mateo. And so let me give you their phone numbers because I've known these women for a long time. I'm very impressed with them, and they've got a lot of experience. As a matter of fact, Jill, before she was sworn in as an attorney in 1992, she actually was a non-law clerk assistant in my office during the summer.
I was so honored to have
Oh, yeah, yeah,
first
okay, all right,
John.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'll give you the $20 later, but that was great of you to say that. Jill, Esther Rosenfeld, the number, these are, by the way, all 650 numbers, and Esther's number is 638-2337. Jill Mondry's number is 650-341-1731, and Lauren Zorfis is 650-638-2312. They are members of the Family Law Section of the State Bar. They're members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Jill also, probably because she was in my office and so enamored with the very high level at which we practice law in the DA's office, she decided that she wanted to be a certified specialist in family law. So those are their numbers, and if you have any desire to get in touch with them and you didn't take down the number, you can call me at my office, the San Mateo County DA's office, and ask for me, and I'll be very happy to give you their phone number. All right, here's a question that was brought in. I have a legal right to half of the sum my husband has put away for retirement. I can see some red flag right there, but that's true. She does.
Generally, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, generally. Okay. My question is, will tapping the retirement fund affect AFFECT, my spousal support? So, I mean, she has, assuming that what he's put away for retirement is during the course of their marriage, so it's community property. She is right on that, assuming that those are the facts. And she's wondering if tapping retirement, and I'm not sure how she thinks she wants to do it. Maybe she's hoping that he will cash in the retirement account, which probably would be a big mistake. But that's what she has in mind. And if so, how would that affect her spousal support? Any thoughts on this? I think it's a very good, very practical question. And obviously, these two people, it sounds like they're not having a good time with each other right now.
May or may not. This is Jill.
Yeah.
It's actually a very complex question. Yeah. One of the things is if the caller understands she has a legal right to this, it may be after judgment.
Yes.
If it is after judgment and there already is a spousal support order in place, then the court has already looked at the asset, which is the retirement portfolio, and the support. And there is a concept in law called double dipping. So you would want to, anybody would say, you can't say, here is your retirement, but now that you take it, I'm going to penalize you for taking it by giving you less support over on this hand. So if that's her situation, then she's in a safe place. It is such a complex issue, however, that this really is one where she would need to get the advice of a lawyer. If she goes to one of the lawyer referral numbers that you've given earlier and go in specifically with the documents in hand, bring all of your information in. If you are very organized walking in the door with a question of this nature, you should be able to get some good, hard answers from a lawyer in a referral context.
And the only other thing that I want to say about this is certainly if you do go to lawyer referral, and you have a family law question, I have found in my practice, I've been a lawyer for a long, long time. And I was, when I was still in Los Angeles, I had a couple of family law cases, and frankly, I find that they are the most difficult. I have prosecuted as a deputy district attorney economic crime cases. Prior to being a deputy DA, I did personal injury. I do unfair competition now in my office, the San Mateo County DA's office. And all I can say to you is if you do contact lawyer referral, make sure that you tell them you want an attorney who spends most of his or her time doing family law. You do not want somebody who's a personal injury attorney or a contract attorney or a real estate attorney to sit down with you, because this is a very special area of the law that you want to make sure you've got someone who's really experienced.
Yeah, you don't want a dabbler.
No, you do not. You do not. All right, the number, 1-415-841-4134.
There's just something that I need to interject.
This is Lauren, just for you, in case you didn't guess, that was Lauren, and she's going to continue.
I need to share with your listeners the fact that this Friday you will be receiving, Mr. Chuck Finney, the William J. Nagel Jr. Award recognizing your commitment to the advancement of professionalism for the San Mateo County Bar Association. And on behalf of my colleagues sitting here, we want to congratulate you, let your listeners know, and let you know how much this county and this Bar Association really does appreciate all the work that you do, your dedication to this program, and what you've done in the DA's office working for consumers, on behalf of consumers, is pretty incredible. And we so appreciate everything that you do, and you are so deserving of this award, and your listeners should know that.
That's very nice of you to say, and I must say this because I'm humbled by this award, but I must also let you know that Lauren Zorfus was awarded this not too long ago. So, but thank you very much for saying that. That's very nice.
You're welcome. The two of you set a very high watermark in this room.
I just hope I don't go underwater. That's all I hope. All right. Thank you very much. We have a few more minutes. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Esther Rosenfeld, Jill Mondry, and Lauren Zorfus. And just so that you know how to spell Lauren's name, it's Z as in zebra, O-R-F-A-S. All right, George, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I guess I have a question. I mean, when you have a situation where, say, the party is extremely antagonistic, for instance, like, you know, if one spouse is claiming the other spouse is engaged in domestic violence, that's being used as a weapon in a separation or divorce proceeding. If you have a situation like that, first of all, substantively, can you point out some general, you know, legal principles that are applicable there? Do the world of criminal law, I guess, and family law coincide or come together? And
unfortunately, George, your phone, I don't know what's wrong with it, but we're missing parts of what you're saying. Are you driving at this point?
Well, I pulled over, but I guess it's not working.
It's very poor, unfortunately. But I think did my guests get the gist of it? All right, turn your radio back up, George, if you would, so you can get the answer on the air and at least get some direction that may be helpful to you.
Okay,
I'm sorry that we couldn't have you stay on the air, but it was very, very poor quality. Who would like to respond? Esther, did you? Lauren, you want to do this?
Sure, yeah. I'll do this. Typically, cases where there have been allegations of domestic violence are difficult to deal with in mediation because of the power imbalances.
Yeah.
Most mediators are not going to get involved in a case like that, and it's really not appropriate for mediation.
No.
I think George also asked about sort of crossover issues in criminal law and domestic and family law domestic violence and how the interplay. I think the most important interplay is understanding that there is a crime of domestic violence which would be prosecuted by your office,
yes,
Chuck, and
yes.
Then there is also civil relief in the form of a civil restraining order that the family law court can issue to protect someone who is the victim of domestic violence, as well as his or her children. And I think one of the most important pieces in all of that is if there is a finding of domestic violence, then presumptions start to shift in family law. For example, mm-hmm. there is a presumption that if someone has committed domestic violence, they should not be awarded legal or physical custody of their child, that it should go to the one who has had domestic violence committed upon them.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is the high income earner, mm-hmm. but they are the one who is the quote unquote battered spouse, the court must consider domestic violence in ordering that person to pay spousal support to their abuser, mm-hmm. and in many cases would not be ordered to pay spousal
really?
Support.
And let me just clarify one thing that Lauren said about the custody piece of it. The presumption would be that joint custody is not in the child's best interest, which is not to say that the abuser will not have time. So sometimes victims of domestic violence are surprised to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
The time will be prescribed in various ways. It may be supervised. It will depend on the degree and the nature of the abuse. But the law states that there's a presumption that joint custody is not in the best interest of the
mm-hmm.
children.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We've got... Can we go on? All right. Skip, welcome to your legal rights.
Evening.
Hi.
I hope I sound better. I know I'm at a lousy spot.
No, you sound better, Skip. You can stay on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I have permission. Okay.
Yeah.
The question. I've got a two-part question. One is, I was unemployed until just before. I was actually a house husband until just before, just after we initially met with the courts, and so my wife has the children every weekday and one weekend. And my concern is that now that I'm working, we're coming towards some conclusion in the next few months. I'm concerned about California's view on the past history so far this past year.
When you say, I'm sorry, the past history, could you abbreviate what is the past history?
Well, the past history has been that I have the children for 2-3 weekends a month, and that's all I've had.
During the past year. So you're concerned because of that.
That was the initial discussion by the court. The decision by the court was that.
Oh, really? Okay. That was an initial decision by the court. Do you know why?
And the reason why was because I was unemployed at the time.
I see.
I was looking for work. And
I see. Okay.
In fact, for the 9 months and the 9 years previous, I had been a house husband taking
so,
care of
So you were taking care of the kids all of the time.
And all the time.
And your wife was out working, making the money for the household.
Yes.
Well, that's some pretty good evidence. Who wants to talk a little bit about? And please, by the way, understand. Do you have an attorney, Skip?
I do now. Yes.
Oh, good.
And,
okay.
And she's going to be a help. I'm looking for an understanding of where the state of California will be sitting on this.
Okay.
This kind of an issue.
Well, every case is different. Let me mention this: the State Bar of California does not permit my guest to give specific legal advice. Yours is a very significant, difficult, I think, difficult question. So please, whatever comments my guests give, it's to give you some direction of where you need to go. But this is, please understand that it is unethical for my guests to give specific legal advice from the State Bar's standpoint. Jill, do you want to say something to him about
absolutely,
this?
Absolutely,
absolutely.
Yeah. So you are right in the... Essentially, you've hit on four major topics that deal with custody. And what you're describing is your concern is that you have what is called a status quo by law. And traditionally, the courts look to that and they do not want to disrupt that. What that is mixed with in your circumstance, however, is another legal concept called a change of circumstance. So if the order was put in place at a time that you were not working and now the circumstances have changed, you have the ability to go back to the court and say, take a look at this again for me, would you? Because it has changed. There are two other concepts that you have brought up, and one is that it could be you are under a temporary order regarding the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then it is anticipated as you finish your case, whether that's through the court system traditionally or through negotiation and mediation, that you would take a second look at what the arrangements are for the children or child and enter into what would be a more permanent order. So again, you've brought up four distinct areas regarding custody, and at some point in time, your attorneys and the judge will consider all of those aspects and whatever would be appropriate to your specific circumstances.
Any other comments? Any other comments for Skip?
That was one of the most beautiful analyses
I've
ever
good.
Heard.
It was good. No, it was excellent. It was excellent. With your background, and, you know, I have not practiced family law, Skip, but with the factual background that you presented to us, my gut feeling on this, as Jill has mentioned, is you still have the opportunity to have much greater time with your children than what's going on right now. So, but make sure that you discuss this very carefully with your attorney.
I appreciate it. Thank
you
very
much. Yeah, good luck to you. Thanks very much for calling. We have just about actually run out of time at this point. And I want to thank you, the three of you, very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Lovely to have you back here.
Thanks for having us.
My guests have been Esther Rosenfeld, Jill Mondry, and Lauren Zorfis. They are family law attorneys. They've been guests on this program before. They're members of the family law section of the State Bar and also the San Mateo County Bar Association. Their offices are in San Mateo. They're not partners, but they're in the same suite of offices. So lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the San Mateo County Bar Association, by the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and by the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about legal services provided by legal aid offices. So if you can't afford an attorney, we're going to talk about that. My guests will be attorneys Shirley Gibson and Stacy Hover of the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County, and Christina Varner, Legal Advice Line Advocate for Bay Area Legal Aid. I thank you very much for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney.